The passage in James today is about schedules and bank balances. There's a lot of biblical background around attitudes to money and experiences of being rich. The condemnation of exploitative practices of the Israelites in the book of Amos is one really good example. It's worth reading, actually, Amos 4 and 5 in particular. Jesus also made observations and told lots of parables about money. In previous chapters, James has been talking about not discriminating against or neglecting those who are poor. He's also been talking about perseverance in suffering. In the passages we're looking at today, James switches gear to talk about being entrepreneurial and accumulating wealth, and where that can go wrong. So the first section today is on about how we plan the business aspects of our lives. And the second is about God's response to injustices by those who are rich. Just don't expect real gentle treatment in either one. Let's read James 4, 13 to 17. Which is about our presumptuousness and arrogance in boasting about plans for tomorrow. Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast and brag. All such boasting is evil. Anyone then who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it sins. In this passage, James appears to be addressing people who are Christians or who know God. So, people like us. It's about people planning their everyday business lives. In those days, for these people, it involved travelling to go trading and to make money. They weren't necessarily being greedy, just planning. But life is ephemeral. Think of the story of the rich fool in Luke 12, the man who accumulated wealth in the form of grain and built bigger barns to store it so that he could sit back and enjoy life's pleasures. He was promptly called to account before God. Think of people who went under during the GFC, the rich and the not so rich. People who had put their trust in accumulating money were crying buckets of tears, and some were even driven to suicide. We see it now. Periodically on our TV screens, about those who are taken in by the promises of large returns on investments, only to find that the company that they invested in has gone bust or they've been scammed. We are like a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Or, as chapter 1 suggests, in James suggests, we will pass away like a wild flower. So does this mean that we shouldn't make plans? That doesn't seem very sensible, especially for someone trading or running a business of any type in today's world. The problem is that these people were planning in exactly the same way as everyone else, with no special consideration of God in their work. They are presumptuous about the future, assuming that tomorrow will be like today. But our future is in God's hands. He gives and he takes away. And what's more, they boast and brag, so there's an arrogance there, as if they did it all themselves. They lack humility. So we need to plan with God, and he will provide for our needs. George Mueller is a great example. He was a German pastor, educator, and prayer warrior, working as a missionary in Bristol. I'm sure many of you know the story of George Mueller. With no resources, he began by responding to the needs of children who had lost their parents in a cholera epidemic. First, by turning his home into a safe place for them. Then he brought eventually three more homes in the street. And when the neighbours complained about the noise, he built a large home in the countryside. And then more and more. Over time, he cared for over 10,000 orphans, founded 117 schools, and helped to educate 120,000 children in an era where many children didn't get schooling at all. And he funded it all through the quiet power of believing prayer. There's famous stories about, you know, the day there wasn't any breakfast, but he gave thanks to God for breakfast, and breakfast turned up. So he once wrote, "The first and great primary business to which I ought to attend every day is to have my soul happy in the Lord." When I set up a training centre at Burradoo, I didn't have a business plan as such, and people would sort of say, "You're supposed to have a business plan. You're setting up a business." Well, actually, I didn't. But I just had this quiet confidence that this is what God wanted me to do. This is where I was meant to be. And it kind of worked out. Worked out pretty well, really. Didn't make zillions as a business, but it was a really good lifestyle. It was, and it was something that helped people, which is what it was meant to be. James Kraft was an inventor, an entrepreneur, and the founder of Kraft Foods. He wrote, "The only investment I ever made which paid consistently increasing dividends is the money I have given to the Lord." He supported the Baptist Church and religious education for young people. Kraft is now one of the second largest food group in the world after Nestle. Jesus taught that if we first seek God's kingdom, our other needs will be met as well. The passage in James ends with a verse that seems a bit out of place, where he moves from the particular to the general, although it begins with then, so it's sort of linked. Verse 17 is, "Anyone then who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it sins." It suggests the listeners had no excuse of being unaware of what was the right thing to do, to see God as sovereign and to follow his plans. So their sin was arrogance. Their sin was thinking they just did it on their own. We plan with God. Does all this mean that we shouldn't make plans? Well, no. But we need to be conscious of God's sovereignty in our lives as we make them, to recognise we're not in ultimate control. We need to take time to listen to God and to determine his will. So what does Christian planning with modern economic systems, which expect long-range planning, look like? Well, I think that's something you might discuss in your small groups. It's a huge topic. Meanwhile, consider the witness of a couple of other Christian inventor or entrepreneurs who gave up the majority of their earnings to Christian causes. Milton Hershey is another one, the founder of Hershey Chocolates. He taught that business is a matter of service, that generosity leads to the richest of rewards, and that everyone's happiness is dependent on the joy of others. He had no children, so he gave his whole fortune to educating other people's children in an era when they normally didn't get it. His fortune was left to an educational trust to provide education and opportunity for orphan boys in the community. It now educates 2,000 boys and girls each year. And during the Depression, he undertook a great community building campaign, creating jobs and creating a foundation to provide cultural, sporting and work opportunities to enhance quality of life for workers and residents in the community. Robert Letourneau is another one who started with nothing. With little education, he invented a scraper, and from there he developed an earth-moving business. He gave 90% of his income away because he could live on the remaining 10%. Planning itself is not the problem. It is the presumptuousness and arrogance of thinking that we can make business or any other plans apart from God. So we are going to now move to looking at the issue of covetousness or being rich. Okay, so what happens when we're rich? We continue the theme of evil, of seeking our own purposes, but now we attack the problem of exploitation of others to enrich ourselves. Now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming upon you. Your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered innocent men who were not opposing you. So who's James talking to here? He's probably addressing non-believers in this passage. So, a little sigh of relief, maybe. He doesn't speak to them in familial terms and he makes no call to repentance. He just offers vitriolic condemnation and a promise of final judgment and eternal suffering. A suggestion is that it could be the Sadducees and chief priests of Jerusalem who live in fine houses and profit from the sacrifices of ordinary faithful Jews that he's talking to, a bit reminiscent of the complaints of Amos. So the question is, why does he say this here, where they're unlikely to read it? It lets God's people know what he thinks of these people. So the moral is, don't try to copy them. Don't feel envious of them. It might be written about non-Christians, but at the same time, there are some lessons for us. He raises three issues about wealth. They are hoarding, self-indulgence, and injustice. We're going to look at those three issues. And I will just keep the passage open so that you can see it as we look. Your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. We accumulate stuff, but it gets chewed or goes to rot. It's of no use to anyone. Possessions don't last, so why seek them, and especially don't hoard them? They too are a mist that disappears. We oldies are kind of looking at issues like, what do we do with our stuff when we're this old? What's going to happen to it when we're gone? Does it just disappear? You know, does it matter? You know, it's all sorts of questions about that. We can't even trust in gold and silver, metals that don't rust. There's an irony here to talk of corrosion. Perhaps it's a deliberate jarring by the author. Gold may not rust, but you can lose it. Or perhaps what gets eaten away is your integrity, your virtue. Or another possibility is that the word for rust is also the word for poison or venom. And maybe a venom that acts by eating your flesh like fire. In God's economy, covetousness and hoarding work against you. Paul writes to Timothy in 1 Timothy 6:9, people who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. Yet we are given resources and gifts to be used. In the parable of talents, the man who received one talent was in trouble for hoarding it rather than using it. The ones that used it to make more gain were praised. Injustice is the second issue that's raised for the rich. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the Lord Almighty, or the Lord of hosts. So, short wages themselves tell a story to God, but the workers are heard, and the workers are heard. Money is designed to be circulated, not amassed, and it's certainly not to be obtained by unfair treatment of others. Unfair treatment of the poor, it can be accidental or deliberate. It might be us directly or indirectly through the companies that we support or whose products we buy. Many of those companies employ what effectively is slave labour. Classic example at the moment is fast fashion. Whether direct or indirect, the company managers and shareholders become rich at the expense of the workers who receive little, and that matters to God. Our lifestyle can directly or indirectly lead to the death of others. For example, our demand for electronics encourages the poor to mine small amounts of metals, often illegally and often in dangerous and high-risk circumstances, at high cost to their health. I remember seeing a video about people collecting, I can't remember what metal it was, but it was from sulphurous fields in Indonesia. At risk of falling into the sulphur pit and breathing the sulphurous fumes as they did, just so we could have electronics. So God, the Lord of hosts, hears the cries of the unjustly treated. In Isaiah 5, we're told God hears the cry of those whose land was stolen by the already rich, and he has already stepped in to judge the oppressor. Why is it that those who are rich always want more, as Noam Chomsky said, to stuff their pockets, to add to already stuffed pockets? It really puzzles me why someone who has millions always wants more. This brings us to the third issue that James raises. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered innocent men who were not opposing you. So the third issue is about extravagance, luxury and self-indulgence. I love the image of the fattened calf or chicken or turkey or whatever it is, the one who pushes others aside to get the best and the most food becomes the first to be chosen for slaughter. The rich people, James describes, are looking after themselves, not others. Think of the rich man and Lazarus. The rich man feasted daily on earth and ended up in hell, not in heaven. Wealth threatens with coming misery and a dulling of spiritual urgency. There is a day of judgment to come. And again, actions to satisfy our own wants are often damaging to others, whether we are aware of it or not. Even worse, the rich and powerful condemn the innocent to prison or death to obtain what they want by taking their land, perhaps in Jewish times, taking their land, hiring them back to work at inadequate wages, and then condemning them to a debtor's prison if they couldn't pay debts. Look, for example, now at what the Jewish settlers are doing to Palestinians on the West Bank. Or less directly, consider who is benefiting from the persecution of the immigrants in the US at the moment. Who will suffer and who profits from the expanding gas industry in Australia or the massive land clearing taking place for agricultural, industrial level agriculture? James goes on to exhort those who suffer to be patient, to wait and to persevere, in anticipation of meeting up with the Lord, like the farmer patiently waits for the fruit of his labours to ripen. He speaks to them as brothers and sisters. These are his congregation, his immediate audience. He and God cares about what's happening to them. So how do we respond as rich Christians? For we are relatively rich. In world terms, of course, we are enormously rich. From chapter 2, we learn that our faith has to be matched by our deeds. The problem is not having money, but trusting in money and loving money and the lifestyle it can buy. Wealth is to be used, but not to pamper ourselves. Maybe it's okay to be rich, but it depends how we got there. It's not okay if it was by exploiting others. God hears the voices of those we don't treat fairly. How it affects our thinking, our attitudes, and our behaviour. Jesus accepted Mary pouring expensive perfume over his feet. Luxury is not inherently bad. It's a gift from God. But greedily seeking it is, especially if it disadvantages others. And it depends what we do with it. The criticism was about hoarding wealth and about living in luxury and self-indulgence. Money works only when it's being used. But should we hold a deposit against future needs? What's the difference between prudent saving and sinful hoarding? It's a hard one to work out sometimes. How do we balance being careful and sensible with trusting God? Can we be too foolish in giving away what we have? What do our choices say about where our security lies? Is our trust in stored wealth or in God? And what does it mean to be fully honourable in handling money? We don't go and shoplift and rob, but do we stretch limits on tax? Beware of fattening yourself in the day of slaughter. We might take note of what C.B. Samuel, who was head of a major aid organisation in India, one supported by Tear Australia, Tear Fund Australia, had written on his wall. I love this saying, this thing that he had written up said, God judges us not by what we give away, but by what we keep for ourselves. So the overall message from today is God opposes the arrogant, both those who plan without considering him and rich exploiters who serve themselves at the cost of others. We need to humble ourselves before God rather than consider our own interest, because he gives grace to the humble. And finally, Paul's advice through Timothy to those who seek and hoard riches in 1 Timothy 6, verse 17 to 19. Command those who are rich in the present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life.